Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real. The case for an aggressive rate cutting cycle is weak, as I explained last week, and it's getting weaker. But these money printing maniacs in government have begun the process of slashing interest rates anyway. I think that is a terrible idea, not only for the middle class of this country, but for its long-term viability as well. But this is not in my purview. I don't control this. I don't control where this government sets rates. So I am concentrating on what I can control, and that is to profit from whatever the government decides to do. And it looks like they have set their heart on sending us into hyperstagflation. I'm not sure if I coined that term. I've never heard it before, but that's my idea. We're going, as a country, into hyperstagflation, which means we're going to have a long period of time of very little growth and extremely high inflation. There is just no legitimate economic rationale to cut interest rates currently. Initial jobless claims fell to 218,000 for the week ended September 20th. That's the lowest level since mid-July. And here we are, and this last reading is late September. The current unemployment rate is 4.3%, which is far below the average since World War II of 5.6%. Hence, even if you are wedded to the Phillips curve theory of inflation and a devotee of labor market economics, there's still no justification to lowering borrowing costs. The GDP revision for the second quarter was higher. It showed that growth was 3.8% at an annualized rate in Q2. And for Q3 GDP growth, the Atlanta Fed has us growing at 3.9%. Inflation is running at 3% and has been above target for 4.5 years. We have record stock and prices and record real estate valuations, and the financial conditions are extremely easy. Nevertheless, Governor Stephen Moran wants 3 consecutive 50 basis point rate cuts. And that is a pathway to starting us down the road to hyperstagflation. Lowering interest rates, getting borrowing costs down, expanding bank loans when the economy is not in a recession. Parts of it are for the middle and lower classes. They've been wiped out. But in aggregate, the top 20% are carrying the ball here. And lowering interest rates to get more corporations buying houses and pushing the stock bubble further into the thermosphere is not what we need. But if you want to know the truth behind government's derisible desire to cut rates, it's this. The Fed and Treasury are aware that the level of debt in the economy has grown to such an extreme and onerous level that if interest rates do not fall quickly and precipitously across the entire yield curve, it would soon lead to a meltdown in asset prices and the economy, just as it also causes interest payments on our debt to become intractable. Of course, my audience is well aware by now that we have 3 massive bubbles existing concurrently for the first time in history: equities, real estate, and credit. But it is the credit market that is the most worrying, because it will be the catalyst that brings down the other 2 bubbles. And here's just a small example of how vulnerable the economy is to rising interest rates and how damaging it could be to asset prices and growth down the road. Here it is. A mere 12 basis point increase in mortgage borrowing costs, so 1/8 of 1% last week, caused mortgage refinancing to plunge by 21%. The takeaway here is the Fed cut rates by 25 basis points, but the long end of the yield curve, where mortgage rates are pegged, increased rather than decreased, and the effect on consumers was profound. Now just think, if 1/8 percentage point increase in rates caused the refi market to go off the rails, just think about what will happen when the credit market really begins to falter and long-term rates spike by hundreds of basis points. And to put more meat on the bones for my argument that there's a massive credit bubble and it's a ticking time bomb, Bloomberg reports that there was a record $400 billion worth of leveraged loans issued in just the third quarter of this year. As a reminder, leveraged loans consist of lending done to businesses that cannot tap the corporate bond market and cannot get a loan from a bank. In fact, if you want to look at the broad picture, total U.S. non-financial debt has soared to $77.9 trillion. And as a percentage of GDP, that's 256%. Total non-financial debt. That includes household debt and business debt and federal debt, state and local debt. It's now 256% of GDP, $77.9 trillion. So let's just go back a quarter of a century. The year 2000, we had just $19.3 trillion in total financial debt, and it was 189% of GDP. By the way, the stock market still crashed, even though it was 189%. Now we're at 256. In this case, you want to compare it to prior to the start of the global financial crisis in 2007? Total non-financial debt was $33.7 trillion. Not $77.9 trillion. And it was 234% of GDP, which is less than 256% of GDP. Remember when we were talking about how over-leveraged the financial system was? Well, we're over-leveraged now. More than we've ever thought possible. All this debt monetization has propelled stocks as a percentage of U.S. household assets to an all-time high. In other words, everyone is all in. Everybody's all in the stock market. U.S. margin debt is also at an all-time high, $1.06 trillion. Margin debt has surged by $139 billion in the last 3 months alone. It's up 33% year over year. So don't tell me there's no debt, there's no leverage, there's no bubble. 33% increase in margin debt? The Mag 7 stocks now comprise more than a third of the entire value of the S&P 500. It requires hammering this point home. This is the most overvalued and concentrated stock bubble in history. I am not saying it's too dangerous to invest in. I mean, we have been net long this bubble for a long time now. But we have ballasts in place. We own inflation hedges that consist of precious metals, gold and platinum. We've had gold for a very, very long time. Months ago, we added platinum, and we recently added silver. We have energy-producing land and energy-producing companies. We have a lot of foreign stocks to profit from the crumbling U.S. dollar. We have investment-grade loans. And we have bonds of the duration between 1 and 7 years. You must be in the correct part of the yield curve. You can't be in the money markets because those rates are going down. And you can't be on the long end because those rates are going to go higher, prices down. You have to know how to profit on the right part of the yield curve. But most importantly, I'll leave you with this. You better have a process that knows when to sprint for the nearest emergency exit. And that is what the Pento Portfolio Strategy's inflation, deflation, and economic cycle strategy does best. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.